Philip Morgan.
Listen, Witherill, good to be in your, I would say your presence. I'm not in your presence, in your glow through the screen. It's just good to be basking in that.
Well, this is as close as we can get until some future date. Mm-hmm. Maybe we get together one of these days and just hammer out like 20 episodes in your podcasting shed. What do you think about that?
The podcasting shack could accommodate
a shack,
you.
Sorry.
And yeah, I like the word shack better. Shed, I mean, yeah, it is a shed also. Yeah, I like that. Actually, I like that a lot. I think what we do, so this is also a storage shed and a laundry room. The sort of sliding bolt lock thing is on the outside.
Okay.
So I say we get my wife to lock us in here until we've reached some threshold of episodes recorded.
Oh, interesting. This is not a bad idea. Maybe this is something we can do, and maybe we like stick a GoPro in the corner so people listening can see us sweating it out while we record these podcasts.
A couple empty 2-liter soda bottles, a bunch of water. Wait till like late August until it's like 100-110 degrees here. I'm liking this.
Yeah. Are the empty soda bottles for evacuation purposes?
They are indeed.
Oh my God. Wow. This is maybe a little more hardcore than I was prepared for.
Well, you're either going to bring it or not. And I'm hoping you can bring it when we do this.
All right. Let's turn this podcast up to Navy SEAL status.
That's right. Woo. What we'll have like,
yes, sir.
Big long beards when we come out.
Uh-huh. I know. After one day, we're both going to have like Moses length beards.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, tell me, do you have something to promote today?
Well, the third cohort of the first workshop in specialization school, which is the decision-making workshop, they're getting close to the finish line. And I have calls with them once a week while they're in this month-long workshop. Maybe there's a little bit of selection bias going on here, but I hear a lot of this process is helping me get clear. This process is helping me narrow down all, a bunch of options. There's a guy in the workshop now. He's awesome. His inventory of previous work plus potential areas of interest was like over 100 options. And he's managed to narrow that down to a short list of 2 or 3.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Again, I don't know. I feel like I'm patting myself on the back here, but this is promote your shit segment. And
get it, buddy.
The process seems to work. It gets people from lots of options to, okay, I've got a few options that I feel pretty good about. And so I hope folks, if they need that, if they're in that, I don't know how to specialize, but I want to place that they'll check out specializationschool.com. I'll have another round of workshops starting in October. So now would be a good time to start checking into that and marking things on your calendar if you're interested.
Wonderful. And I want to give you an unpaid endorsement here. I didn't take specialization school, but I can attest to Philip's ability to do this because at the start of the year, I was pivoting my business and you and I think we had 2 phone calls. And in that time, it became really clear that of the 5 ideas I had, one seemed really good, which checked a lot of boxes for sales and marketing and my positioning and how memorable it was and how much competition there was. And it has had a huge impact on my business. So yeah, you know what you're doing.
Thank you, man. Yeah. The other 4 were offensively bad. No, I'm kidding. Listen.
Well, no, I don't think they were.
That's why you needed the help, is the other 4 were pretty right. Close seconds.
I was going to say that you're selling yourself short because it's much harder when you have multiple good options.
That's the common situation, is everybody has good options because we're surrounded by opportunity. There's so much opportunity that, yeah, you're right. It's not like I have one good option and a bunch of bad ones. It's like I have a bunch of good options. How do I decide then?
Boom. So specializationschool.com.
You're right. Specializationschool.com is the answer to everything. How about you, Liston? Anything you want to promote today?
Yeah, actually, coming up on October 9th, I'm launching the second iteration of Consulting Sales Bootcamp. Right now, I am, as of this recording, 3 weeks in with my first cohort, and the feedback has been really, really tremendous. People are already applying what they're learning to sales calls and sales deals that they have now, and I was really pleased to see that within 2 weeks, people started identifying follow-up that they could do with existing deals that have just sort of been maybe not neglected, but deserved a little bit more attention than they were getting. And people are learning a process by which to approach every new deal. They know how to follow up. Like, it's, I've been really pleased with it. So if you're interested and you're listening to this, head over to consultingsalesbootcamp.com. There's a page there that describes it. I'm going to put up a waiting list so you can sign up on that waiting list right from that page. And that starts on October 9th. So you don't have to make a decision now, but if you want to be first in line, this would be a good time to do it.
You're starting in October too. That's great. 'Tis the season.
Yep. So October 9th, and then next year I'm hoping to run it monthly.
Oh, monthly. Wow.
Monthly.
Whoa.
Yeah. That's probably another conversation for another podcast. Open and closed cart versus continuous rolling enrollment.
That would be an interesting one for sure.
I'll go ahead and add that to our board here.
Get it in Asana.
But that's not what we're talking about today.
Yeah, let me set things up. So I was sort of in the hot seat last time,
yep,
talking about my ideas for what are these little building blocks of skill that you can start learning that are very miniaturized compared to diving into the thing. Last week it was specialization. Like, that's a decision, but it's a decision that's kind of wrapped in a whole bunch of other related considerations.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we talked about. Longtime listeners are not appreciating this recap. Now we're going to put the spotlight on you, Liston.
Yep.
Your thing is sales. And of course, there's always associated things. It's not just getting better at selling. It might be getting better at, I don't know, listening or confidence or a bunch of things. So same question to you. What are the little miniaturized building blocks, things that people could do now or they could do more easily or they could do in a way that would like pave the way for greater success in sales?
I have a lot to say about this, and you...
How... Do you have bullet points? How many things are on your list? Let me start with that.
I have 5 bullet points.
Woo! Nice. Okay.
Is that a lot?
Well, I'm just trying to get a sense of scope here, like, so we can set the pace appropriately.
Oh, yeah. We're going to keep it moving, buddy.
Right on. You got a lot to say. The mic, the floor is yours.
Well, so let's start at the fundamentals. Not even the fundamentals of what to do to be better at it. But the first question is, why do we buy anything? So before we can address selling, we need to understand why people are buying. Because in order for you to sell something, someone needs to buy. And the very first thing that I would say about that is people want to, I think this is your term, Philip, improve their condition.
Nope, that's Alan Weiss's.
Alan Weiss.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a great way to think about it. The way I would say it is people want a better future. They want tomorrow to be better than today.
Yeah.
Same way of saying the same thing, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so if someone wants a better future, the question is, how do they make decisions, not being able to predict the future? How do they make decisions about how to deploy their resources in order to get that better future? Well, that depends on their preferences and values.
Yeah.
Where do those come from? Well, those are formed over time based on people's own innate, I'd say, wants, not needs, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason one person buys a certain car or they buy your consulting services or they buy something else may be slightly different than the reason someone else buys it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is all to say, in a very long and roundabout way, that people are buying anything in order to make tomorrow better than today.
All right, I'm with you.
So if we're in a position to sell, what we want is totally irrelevant, right?
That's right.
It's about focusing on the other person. So the first, a number one thing I would say that you need to start to develop as a foundational skill is empathy in conversations for the people you're talking about. Trying as hard as you can to develop a muscle whereby you understand what this person wants and how they feel. Because in order to sell something, to get at that, what are this person's values and preferences, and therefore why would they buy my thing and not something else? You have to first really strive to understand them.
So our audience is good-looking, intelligent, extremely successful.
Yeah.
But maybe there's some misconception around empathy. Do you need to define what empathy means or give some context to that? Are people going to understand it, or am I just being too fastidious?
Empathy, the actual dictionary definition, is the ability to understand and share the feelings of another.
Okay.
Right?
Sort of be in their shoes, see the world the way they see it, that kind of thing.
Right. So it's not just enough to say this person is scared or pressured or stressed.
Uh-huh.
You also need to be able to actually feel it. Similar to the way, like, method acting, you're familiar with this, like, you know, sizzle like a piece of bacon, that kind of stuff, right? It's sort of similar to that idea where if you're an actor, your performance on the screen is really impactful if you mean it. And if you actually feel the way the character felt, because then you're not really acting, you're actually feeling it. And I think for selling, and this is people, I had a client the other day, this was really funny. He goes, you know, I always thought of selling as a career as kind of a joke.
Uh-huh.
He's like, I never really saw it as like a professional endeavor.
Oh,
and
wow.
He said, the more I learn about it, the more I realize how much professionalism needs to be in it in order to do well.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I'd say the key reason is you need to start to become a psychologist, a coach, a counselor, a partner to the people that you're working with. And the precursor to all of that stuff is empathy.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you now. I get it.
All right. So you're still with me. Okay. That's bullet number one. And we're moving fast. Let the record show, Philip. We're moving here.
Now that you've said that's it for bullet one, I'm now immediately dissatisfied. So,
of course you are.
How do you cultivate empathy, or how do you develop this skill?
So that's a tough one. I don't have a great answer for that.
Oh, we are not moving on until we come up with one.
So my feeling is there's different personality types, and some people are more inclined towards people and some people are more inclined towards objects. Men especially more inclined towards objects. So if you're a software development, you're going to be more interested in things than people. So it's going to take more for you, generally speaking, of course, these are just averages.
Sure, sure. Big, wide generalization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, you're going to have to work a little bit harder at this. If you ask people questions, here's how I would say, like, if you have a hard time with this, just ask people questions about how they feel, which I know feels touchy-feely and like sort of woo-woo. But if you just ask someone in their given situation, how did that make you feel? Or how do you feel about that? You have to use the word feel in your question.
Yeah. Okay.
That'll start to help you understand, like, when I'm seeing certain body language, people are more likely to feel this way. When they're in this situation, they're more likely to feel this way. Really, I think some of it comes through data, but some of it also comes through simple reflection and you asking yourself, okay, what would it be like to be in that situation, right? I wake up and I'm in this situation. How do I feel on that day? What do I want to do about it? How does that affect what I'm thinking when I eat my breakfast? That sort of exercise of, like you said, putting yourself in someone else's shoes, but getting very specific about it, I think.
I see you as like good at this foundational skill of empathy. Were you always good at it?
Probably not. I'd say I'm naturally very, very curious about people. And like I've been saying in every iteration of my business, I'm driven to understand why people do the things they do. And like, that's probably my most common thread of my lifelong fascination of like any learning endeavor.
Yeah.
But I think most of my life, I've approached that more as a scientist than someone seeking to understand like how it actually felt. I'm sort of like, well, if this, then that, because my DISC profile is DC. And so C being analytical, I'm definitely more of a driver than the C part of my personality, but I'm quite analytical. That can be a little bit more object oriented, right?
Okay. So maybe you haven't always been good at it. I think we might maybe think of teenagers as like sort of bad at this because of they just haven't developed yet. I mean, did you ever do anything to get better at empathy.
Okay, so one hindrance to empathy, right, is like, so what is the opposite of empathy? I would say narcissism, right? So that doesn't mean, like, I'm not saying that for you, Philip, or anybody listening to this to think, oh, there's something wrong with me, or there's some sort of, it's just sort of like that's the spectrum. On the far side of the empathy spectrum, you're so taken by other people's feelings that you don't know how to feel yourself. You're taking cues from other people constantly. And narcissism, the complete opposite of that, would be like, you're incapable of even entertaining the idea of how someone else would feel, whether it's vis-a-vis your actions or something else. So when you say teenagers, one thing I would say is if you're, a lot of teenagers are very self-absorbed. Who am I? How do I carve out an identity that's different from my parents? What is my purpose? How do I derive meaning in life? That question never goes away, right? But it's worse for teenagers.
Yeah. They're tackling it for perhaps the first time rather than the third or fifth or tenth
time. Or the thousandth time, right?
Yeah, right.
And so I just looked up an article, Six Habits of Highly Empathetic People. And this is based on an author. I have not vetted this, so I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants.
Woo. Taking some risks here on the offline podcast.
One really important thing, this is the habit number one. It says cultivate curiosity about strangers.
I agree with that. Yeah, like that's maybe the first step is, I don't know if you're going to bring up active listening. This seems related that where we know with active listening, a lot of times in these situations that might bring up nerves or fear, a lot of us default to, okay, what's my next move? What am I going to say when there's a break in the conversation? Let me plan that out so I don't embarrass myself or I don't say something stupid or I don't lose face or whatever. So active listening requires that you put that impulse on hold, that you turn down that the volume of that voice in your head saying, what are you going to say next?
Right.
Oh my God, think of something good, right? So maybe this is related to that where it's, you're saying you were naturally good at that. I have also always, because I'm an introvert, been the one who's like, I'm going to fold my arms and I'm going to kind of go back against the wall and I'm going to just try to understand everything that's happening in a social situation rather than actually being involved in it. I'm going to be this observer looking at it. So I'm wondering, like, if someone is not naturally practiced or good at that, what do they do to get better? Maybe it's just they set a goal. My stretch goal is I'm going to ask a few more questions than I'm normally inclined to in this conversation.
I think one is catch yourself whenever you start talking about yourself. So this is natural, right? So why do we communicate? Two reasons. One is to learn, exchange information. The other is liking. I want to be liked. The other person wants to be liked, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people overemphasize the liking part. People who don't have that empathy developed, they're overemphasizing mm-hmm. the liking part where they want to be liked. The irony, of course, is you will be liked more if you just ask more questions and become more interested in the other person, even if they know nothing about you. People who are highly effective at this, they'll walk away from conversations and the other person will say, man, I really liked her. I don't know anything about her, but boy, she was awesome. And the reason is because she was asking the other person questions, right?
Yeah.
So two tools. So we're kind of, this is related to empathy, but I do have another thing on my list is asking open-ended questions, right?
Okay.
So with a slight asterisk next to it, but basically asking people questions about themselves. So my wife always says this, like, we'll get a Lyft or an Uber. Actually, no, we get a Lyft. We don't do business with Uber. And
yeah.
I'm able to learn, like, in a 10-minute ride, where the person is from, what they really want to be doing instead of driving Lyft,
uh-huh.
what they get out of it, how they feel about it, whether or not they want to stay in Portland if they're from somewhere else. Like, I can learn a lot in that time, right? And it's simply because I'm asking open-ended questions like, so, hey, are you from Portland? And that leads to all kinds of things. No, actually, I moved here for family. Now, here's the key, follow-up questions, right? That's where the gold is. And this is one thing I teach in Consulting Sales Bootcamp is people are going to open a door for you where you can learn a lot more about them. And an empathetic person will go, oh, I wonder about that. I want to know more about that thing that they mentioned sort of in passing, but seemed very important to them. And so all you have to say is, can you say more about that? I mean, it's not incredibly ingenious at all. It's obvious. However, related to active listening now and empathy, you have to be interested enough in the person to go, oh, I wonder what's behind that. I want to know more about that thing. And then ask them and then be quiet and listen.
Yeah.
And so to me, this habit number one, cultivate curiosity about strangers, is pretty big. And so like one easy way, and a lot of people, if people are afraid to interact or do public speaking, like one exercise you can do is just go talk to strangers, right? Just ask strangers one question. What'd you think of the weather today? Or I would say ask contextual questions because it makes it much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Habit number three is try another person's life, which is like put yourself in their shoes. And so like, here's another thing you can do. If you're walking down the street and you see someone dressed funny or different or something like that, just ask yourself, I wonder what their story is, and start to think about it. There's actually quite a bit that you can deduce as a result of it. I think that's all I have to say about empathy.
Yeah, it really seems to be rooted in a curiosity about other people.
Yes.
That seems like that's the linchpin, is like, if you can take action on being curious about other people, I think you'll kind of get bruised a few times. If you're like, any kind of learning, I think, involves making mistakes or doing things quote unquote wrong. So if you're really willing to lean into it, I think you'll screw up a few times, but mostly, yeah, that seems like a pretty reliable way to start building that skill.
Well, yeah. If you're trying to improve any skill, there's nothing you can do where you'll be 100% at it. One thing I would say is, unfortunately, due to the necessity of survival, we're much more attuned to the bad things that happen than the good things. So if you engage in a conversation where you're curious about someone and they reject you for whatever reason, that's probably only going to count for like 3% or less of all your interactions, but you're going to remember that one.
Yeah. Right. Selective memory. Okay. Well, we can move on. I just wanted to make sure we had at least one suggestion or one idea about like something someone could actually do to build that skill of empathy.
Okay. Point number two, this is the mindset, right? So if you want to get better at selling, let's go back to the foundation, right? People buy in order to make tomorrow better than today. And in order to understand why they've arrived at that better tomorrow, we need to develop empathy. And in order to sell them anything, we need to understand, can we help them or not? And so the second thing that I would say is stop thinking about selling anything.
Okay.
Start thinking about being in service. So I say this all the time, serve, don't sell.
Serve, don't sell.
There you go, Philip. You got the timing down, man.
We did it in unison.
The training was effective.
That pause after the serve part is this pregnant pause. Yep.
A very funny phrase, pregnant pause.
Yep.
I just imagine like a cat birthing kittens out of its paws. Mm. Anywho, that's my mind. So this idea of serve, don't sell, right? What is the implication there? Well, I think the implication is always being attuned. Again, this curiosity of strangers, just like, how can I help people, right? Is there anything I can do to help someone, whether it's in a business context or not? Now, the more I think about this, the happier I become, because sure, there may be a financial reward in helping people, but being helpful and in service is really a reward unto itself. I'm not a religious person, but they got that right. That's definitely true, that the social and psychic rewards from helping other people are just immeasurable. It will change your life, but it will also make you much more effective in your business.
I want to kind of, again, push you to come up with like, what's a thing someone can do to start practicing this? Have you ever worked with anybody who, like, this whole idea is so foreign, they think the only purpose of a sales conversation is to close, aside from our used car dealer example from a few episodes back?
Yep, which I used in my course, by the way.
Nice. Have you ever come across anybody who is single-mindedly focused on selling and never serving?
Oh, yeah. Well, never serving, I guess, what does that mean? Like, they're not going to deliver at all?
Well, no, in the context of their business. I mean, like, this whole idea is just like, what are you talking about? Yeah. I would never talk to anybody unless it looks pretty likely that I can sell something to them. Let's say that, have you ever run across anybody who's kind of like that?
Yeah.
So that does exist. I just wanted to establish that that does exist. So let's imagine that we're talking to that person. What do they do to start practicing this idea? Do they take a sales call and say, okay, I am going to try to make it to the end of this call without selling anything, and it's going to take all of my might to prevent myself from doing that? Like, how do we approach this?
The really easy heuristic is don't pitch during discovery. So if you're in a mode of trying to figure out how to help the person, you're never pitching. You need to tell them enough about like who you are and what you do and sort of how your business works just to satisfy their curiosity and give them enough to make a judgment about whether they should keep talking, but you're not pitching them.
Okay.
So if our goal is to serve someone,
yeah,
that begs the question, well, what's the problem? If I'm going to help someone, I need to know what I can fix.
Okay.
And so until you get a complete picture of that, there's no reason for you to pitch any solution.
Is that something that folks sort of misunderstand, is where they're sort of superficial in their diagnosis, where they like, oh, I see what the problem is here. This person has clearly called me because they need a new website or they need this or that, and they sort of shortcut the discovery?
Well, I think it's endemic to expertise in general, right?
Mm.
Where like the old saying,
when all
you're a hammer. Every
yeah.
Right. Every problem is a nail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also a little bit of the curse of knowledge.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard this 1,000 times. Like, I know what it is. Here you go.
So we kind of maybe are predisposed to rush through this discovery process.
I think so. And it's something that I have to, the more I'm in my new business, the more I have to check myself and I have to go, huh, am I getting lazy in my sales process? Like, did I ask all the questions? And so that leads me to habit number three, which is reflection.
Okay. But just to sort of mini summary here. So Phil, before we move on to that, Phil, I'm so sorry.
You're killing me.
I am killing you. I know. I'm killing your momentum. I'm wrecking your act here. So slow it down, maybe, and ask more questions than you think you might need to, if this is a skill that you need to work on, right?
Yeah. So if you're trying to get better at selling, I think let's just go back to the first part.
Yeah.
Really developing that empathy muscle, being curious, asking questions, asking follow-up questions, and then on the service, serve, don't sell part, it's just making sure that you really fully understand this person before you move on to delivering any sort of solution idea to them.
I skipped my whole canned rant about follow-up questions because you said it better. That's where most of the gold is.
Oh, okay. No, can I hear your canned rant, please?
Well, it's where most of the gold is.
Okay.
It kind of depends on who you're talking to, but a lot of people will not tell you what you really need to know unless you ask these follow-up questions.
Yeah, I agree.
Blair Enns talks a fair bit about mastering silence as a tool for in certain points in a sales conversation. And after you ask a question, so blah, 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 oh, why is that? Or what do you make of that? Or what do you think is going on there? Or wait, when does that happen? I'm just throwing out a few of the thousands of variations of a follow-up question you could ask. And then just shutting up for enough time. It's a bit of an art. You could obviously make things weird and awkward by having too much silence or dead air, but it shows that you were serious when you asked the question. If there's sufficient silence for the person to go, oh, wow, they really meant it. They want to know more. And they're not going to cave and just blab to fill silence.
Right. I would actually say it's not awkward to ask a question and then just be quiet until you get a response.
Yeah, maybe someone needs time to think about it.
Maybe the other person will feel slightly awkward, but it's not going to be like a lingering feeling. So on my coaching calls, if I ask a big kind of shake the ground kind of question, I know for some of my clients, it's going to take them 20 seconds to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if their eyes go up, especially into the upper left corner, right? They're accessing their active logical mind and they're trying to process and kind of go, huh, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's just a sign of a good question.
Yep.
And I agree with you. You really have to be quiet during that time. And I think what you'll find is the social contract says, when someone asks a question, you have to answer it. So if you're just quiet, people will answer you.
Yeah.
And if they don't know how to, just be quiet and they'll ask you, can you clarify or maybe ask in a different way, or I'm having trouble with this. And you'll say, no worries, let me rephrase.
Yeah.
Right. But 99% of the time, people will answer you.
Okay. Moving along.
That was point number five, actually, practicing silence in conversation.
Damn it. I'm sorry I stole your thunder.
No, it's okay. Well, all of these ideas are related, right? They all descend from that first idea, which is to have genuine curiosity.
Yeah.
We've already discussed asking open-ended questions. The next thing I would say is active listening. So active listening is a technical term for an actual thing you do. There's also something called reflective listening. And I believe the difference is, and I'm just going to call this up right now.
I'm not sure I've ever heard of reflective listening. That's a new one for me.
Active listening, according to Wikipedia, is a communication technique that requires that the listener fully concentrate, understand, respond, and then remember what is being said. Yeah, like super helpful, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to, how does that differentiate from active listening?
This is active listening. So tactically, active listening, it says the listener observes the speaker's behavior and body language, which I think is very important. So we're communicating beyond just the content of our words,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the reasons you and I love podcasting so much, right? Because people get to hear our voice and our inflection and how I just sped up and other times I may slow down yeah. and that communicates something different.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of ways that people are communicating with you beyond the content of their words. So I'd say that's a thing to start to pay attention to. Body language is not really a complicated field of study, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. There's basically like confident and internally focused and sort of anxious. There's not a lot of different things that people are going to show you with their body language, but they're all important and useful to interpret.
I'm just remembering the confidence buddy thing.
What is that?
So remember a few episodes back, we were talking about building confidence and you found something on the HubSpot blog about have a confidence buddy.
Find a confidence buddy. Yeah.
I forgot you're my confidence buddy.
Yeah. Well, clearly I am. And clearly you're mine, Philip. You know, I was watching this TED talk, very, very famous TED talk about this woman who was in this severe car accident and it hurt her IQ. Like she was like head of the class before. I forget her name. Abby, I think. I forget her last name, but she has a best-selling book and she ended up getting a PhD. And her research was, could body language lead confidence and intelligence?
Hmm.
So you've probably heard this, like if you just stand confidently, you're going to be more confident and smarter.
Right.
And I don't believe that. And actually it's been debunked by quite a bit of research. As you may have heard, there is a duplication problem in social science research. And so I think this is a prime example. But I think that active listening, it means being fully in the moment. So absolutely present. And I can tell you it's hard. Like,
yeah, it's effortful. I mean, that active part is like, it's not just that you're doing things that are maybe like require real like emotional labor. Or real mental focus, yep. or real discipline, all of which for many, I mean, I guess I'm going to speak for myself, like that's some of the most valuable stuff that I have to offer the world. And it's also some of my lesser developed capabilities.
Yeah, it's effortful just in the way anything that requires a lot of focus is effortful, right? So if I'm going to sit down and create some long form content, like that requires deep work. And I would say this is actually similar. Like it should be a little taxing to your energy to pay that close attention to someone.
and maybe this is obvious, but it's not taxing in the way that charging forward is. It's like, I almost think of it as like the effort you have to apply to restrain yourself.
That's right.
From outrunning the conversation is maybe the hardest part. It's like the effort is in holding back and saying, if I need to think about this, I will do that when I'm called upon, not while this other person is talking, because now I've got two voices and I'm trying to differentiate those two voices. One's in my head and the other's obviously the other person talking. And it requires this trust that you're not going to look like a dodo if you take a second to think about something. It really is kind of deep when you look at all the elements of work that go into it. So that active part is just hard work.
And so maybe to make this a little bit more tangible and easy to understand, reflective listening is also in Never Split the Difference, Chris Voss's book.
Oh, love
about
that.
Negotiation, which is fantastic. If you haven't read it, go read it.
In a way, half the book is about this skill of listening, isn't it?
Well, it's all about understanding if you're in a communication. The book is essentially about how do I understand what the person wants? Because if I can understand that, I can help maybe satisfy some of those wants.
Right. It's like about 10% about how to get what you want and 90% about how to understand what the other person wants, how they see the world, what they're going through in that negotiation.
Yeah, there's lots of stories I could tell from that book. But anyway, great book. But the way he calls it isn't reflective listening. He calls it mirroring, yeah, which is exactly the same idea. And this is a mechanical way to improve your active listening skills. So when someone says something, it's simply just saying, so what I understand you just said is blank, yeah, right? And it's better if you rephrase it into your own words than in their words, because it'll help you remember it.
We'll role play this for you.
Sure.
Okay. Listen, the reason this podcast is not going really well is because I'm hungry.
So what I understand you saying is that your hunger is affecting the success of this podcast?
You got it. Great, great example.
Well, huh? Get your wife to unlock that door and go get a snack, my man. So yeah, it really is as simple as that too. That's a great example.
And I'm joking about the podcast not going well. Anyway, go ahead.
No, you're not. No, you're not. I know where your heart is. I think that is a useful way to start practice active listening, because if you're sort of forced to know there are going to be beats, like there's going to be a beat in the conversation where you're going to go like, okay, let's just check back on what was just said so I understand that I'm on the right track.
Yeah. And one thing I can't help but bring up from that Chris Voss book is that he differentiates between you're like summarizing what you heard somebody say, or you're repeating back to them what they said. And he believes there's this important difference between them saying you're right versus them saying that's right. Like,
oh, yeah,
if they're saying you're right, then they might be just trying to move on and you've not really got it right. If they're saying, oh yeah, that's right. And I'm not sure that I don't have enough experience with this to know if that difference is a hugely important one, but it sure seems so when you read this book.
I personally thought that section of the book was a little overblown, and it was just to contextualize it for people listening. It was in the context of people arriving at the conclusion you wanted them to come to that would satisfy your negotiation goal. So if they said that's right, then it's like, oh, okay, it's sort of Socratic, right? Like they feel like they arrived at that.
Right.
And they're in full agreement.
Right. But if they say you're right, it's a weaker form of agreement because they're maybe are just trying to please you or.
Yeah, they could be placating. Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, we've got a few more.
That's right. See what I did there? I've actually covered everything on the list to different degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the last thing I would say. If you want to be better at sales, again, hopefully this isn't too woo-woo, but I want you to take a second to think about what sales means to you. Do you have baggage about it? And do you completely believe in what you're selling? Because if you have baggage about selling and or you don't completely believe in what you're selling, it's going to be a slog. It's going to suck for you and it's going to suck for the person on the other end of the phone.
I think we're speaking to a group that's largely selling their own services.
True.
And so there's a quality of like changing the engine on the airplane while it's in flight.
Yep.
In that, I'll go first here and say that there was a time when I didn't believe in what I was selling. And what I was selling was my own services.
Yep. I've had that.
And that's a sort of nasty feedback loop, because how do you get better unless you can sell your services and have the opportunity to improve through delivering them, learning? In other words, like, you sort of have to sell yourself into the ability to do that on-the-job learning. Really, I mean, you're right. That held me back for a long time, that feeling of like, I'm not totally sold on the value of what I'm selling. And that made me worse at selling. And it also gave me fewer opportunities to get better at the thing I was selling. So I hope that doesn't lead people to a cul-de-sac. I'm not saying it would. I think I'm a little more sensitive about some of this stuff than most people are.
Well, in other words, if you do this exercise and you say, yeah, I don't really believe that in most instances when I sell my service, it's actually going to help someone.
Mm-hmm.
If you truly believe that statement,
mm-hmm.
the other person's going to sense it.
Yeah.
There's just no way around that.
Even if you do everything in your power to cover it up, I believe others will sense it most of the time.
Yeah, or at least a percentage will.
Yeah.
And so to me, that says maybe you don't have a sales problem. Maybe you have a career and service focus problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I want you to do is not conflate other issues with the selling issue. Of course, everything's related to some degree, but if you don't believe in what you're selling, like, that, it's just kind of a non-starter. It's always going to be difficult.
Yeah, that's a sort of root cause that would have a lot of different presenting symptoms, but the root cause is what has to be dealt with.
Yeah, that concludes my whole spiel about how to be better at sales. Shall I repeat just for clarity here?
I think so. I mean, I've thrown a bunch of monkey wrenches in what could have been a very clean presentation if I hadn't interfered. So yeah, I think a summary is good.
Well, you know, if it were video, I would have brought slides just to make it a lot easier.
Thank
so
you. Yeah.
Habit number one is start to develop your empathy muscle. So really start to focus on other people, what they want, and be curious about others. Habit number two, stop selling early on in the process. Just focus on what's going on with this person and is there any way I can help them? Habit number three is active listening. And you may make that easier by doing reflective listening, whereby you repeat things that you hear. Habit number four, asking open-ended questions and follow-up questions. This is, as Philip says, where the gold is. And then habit number five, which we touched on briefly, is practicing silence in conversation so that you give space for the other person to think and then respond. What do you say, Philip? Are you ready to go be your best self?
I'm just practicing silence. Yeah. Woo, yeah. This is great stuff, Liston. I'm always often saying, okay, how can we use, I promise this is not a tangent. I feel like it's in the line of summing this up. How can you use like everyday life situations to practice things that'll make you better at your job? And that's two things. That's hopefully me trying to make it easier for folks to acquire these valuable skills. And also it's just proof of how many crevices of my life self-employment has seeped into the fact that I think about things like, I don't think about like, how can my job help me live my personal life better? I think, how can my personal life help make my career better? I don't know if that's good or bad, but also I feel like everything you've mentioned can be practiced on the personal level and make personal relationships better. Like, yeah. Okay, you said serve, don't sell. If you take that as serve, don't try to convince your spouse or your romantic partner to do what you want to do, but it's applicable there too.
Because that never works anyways. You're right.
I think there's a way to practice these things in little tiny ways throughout your life and
yep.
see a lot of things get better, not just business stuff, but your personal life too. Like, these are really relationship skills, in other words.
That's sort of my dirty little secret about my business is I want to create more effective human beings, people who have better relationships and better interactions and can articulate what they're feeling. And that's like my secret goal. That's what I want to give to people. And these skills are the foundational elements, not just to selling, but to being a more effective person, a better friend, right? And so let me leave you with this. There's only one thing you implement when you walk away from this. It's to ask more questions and ask follow-up questions. And if you just do that, you're going to be amazed at how much you can find out about people. And the learning and gathering of information is like just such an essential skill in sales.
Why is that, Liston? I'm just kidding. I'm not trying to extend the podcast anymore. I just wanted to end with
that. That was the first thing we covered, right? Because people buy in order to get a better tomorrow, and they define that better tomorrow based on their own values. And we can only know any of that unless we ask questions.
See, look at all that gold in that follow-up question. Boom. Liston, it was great to talk to you, my man.
Good to talk to you too, man. I'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.